Welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. I'm your host, Jenna Josephowski, but you can call me Jenna J. I'm a semi-retired professional dancer, dance teacher, and yoga teacher turned certified personal trainer and kettlebell instructor who helps active women learn to lift and get strong with equal parts challenge and compassion. After years of working in the fitness industry, I got sick and tired of watching people, including myself, run themselves into the ground trying to uphold the narrow-minded image of what our culture sees as healthy and fit. But instead of giving it all up, I decided that I'd rather change the game, call out the BS, extract the good, and help others learn to use movement as a way to build themselves up rather than tear themselves down. On this podcast, we'll explore the intersection of fitness and anti-diet culture and all the gray areas in between. We'll let go of shoulds and judgments and dig into tough conversations with curiosity. Things get pretty spicy around here, so grab your headphones and let's do this. Hey friends, welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. We are back with another crossover collab bonus episode. It's me and my friend Christina Montalvo today, and we're talking about a lot of things on this episode. We started off with the intention of talking about our experience living with men, dealing with all of the stuff that comes up around that, but then it turned into some really different conversations. We went down a bunch of rabbit holes about growing up in our families of origin. We talked a lot about money mindset, about therapy, all sorts of things. I think you can start to expect this from us, that we just go off the rails a little bit and talk about all sorts of things. So anyway, let's go talk to Christina about all of that.
Hi, Jenna.
Hey, Christina.
We are back with another crossover episode. Or is that what we're just going with? Crossover?
Yeah, it's a crossover. Yeah.
And we were supposed to be in person today, but this time at your house, because our first couple episodes, we were at my house and we are down to one car. So it didn't work out. And we are on freaking Zoom today.
So sad. I'm wishing that you could be here in my shed with me. I had a variety of like beverages prepared. I'm having a cold brew right now. But I also have a sparkling water, because have you seen that trend on like, yes. Are you also drinking cold brew and sparkling and a protein shake?
No. So this is just regular water.
I have a regular water too. Hold on. I need to get mine. I've got this. Christina, I had that in vanilla in my car on the way home from work.
So here's my protein shake. Here's my protein shake. This is my regular water, my sparkling, and then just like my regular coffee.
We both have the exact same.
What do you have?
The same thing. Well, I have cold brew coffee. I have a sparkling water. I have regular water. And then my protein shake I drink in the car on the way home.
Oh my goodness. That's hilarious. Well, multiple cheers to us, I guess, Jenna.
Yes. Like, cheers. Multiple cheers and cheers again. We've got to have all the things. If I sound a little hoarse today, I'm getting over some shit show of a virus that is apparently not COVID, not the flu, not strep, and not an ear infection.
But did have an eye infection.
I did have an eye infection. That's why I'm wearing my glasses.
I love your glasses. For those that can't see Jenna, Jenna is just like Jenna all the time. You got to love it. And I always call her the rainbow to my black, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Jenna right now has like yellow glasses on that just are so becoming of Jenna, and they match her yellow. Is that like a yellow tank top?
It's a yellow tank top.
Yellow,
yeah.
Green.
Yeah. And I didn't plan it to be matching. It's just that I own a lot of colors and sometimes I end up in monochrome by mistake.
And you guys can't see me, but I'm wearing black. So it's perfect. Here we are. Yes. What else did you do this week, Jenna?
I went to see Lizzo.
How was that?
It was incredible and everything that I needed it to be. It was so great. Good. It was so great.
I love that. What time did you get home? Was it a late night?
Not till after midnight. I was so tired.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I can't do that anymore.
Me neither.
I was dying.
But so worth it though for Lizzo. I'm so jealous that you got to go see her.
Next time we'll invite you. We'll make sure we get you in. All right.
I couldn't see you liking concerts, though. I feel like you're too much of an introvert. Do you like concerts?
I don't like concerts. I like the kind of concerts where I can like be on a blanket on a field and like have my own space. Do you know, what like, if we've been to like Ravinia?
Yes. What if we got like super bougie and got like a skybox at the United Center and had our own little.
So that for sure. Concerts are fine. I used to go to concerts all the time in high school, even in undergrad. But now that I'm like actually older and already like an old soul to begin with, if I have a choice, if I have a choice of my music setting, I'm going to go like low and slow or like sure. a live, like one of my favorite things is like a live local band at like a local bar.
Okay. I really like that vibe too.
Right. That's more so if I had to choose my vibe, that's my vibe.
I mean, you can't have that vibe with Lizzo because so many people love her and she's just so everything.
Yes. I love that you had that. Cause I know that it was a shit show week, like you were saying. So what a nice break. Lizzo's a good break to a messy week.
Just, I feel like Lizzo will make your life better, friends. If you're like, if you're feeling sad, just like get a Lizzo album, just like play it all the way through. You'll feel better.
So
how was your week?
Oh, well, my week was actually really nice. Mike was off work this week, which is, can be a double-edged sword. So on the one hand, we got a lot of work done, like all of our garden projects and outside of the house projects. We like handled a lot of that. And it was so nice. I love being outside. I love gardening. It's always easier to do that with a buddy when instead of it's like me by myself. So that was really nice. Besides the car being in the shop, which is just a nightmare when you're like, I have to be here and you have to be there. And who's doing this with one car? It's just been an interesting week with the car situation. But other than that, good week so far. But I am happy it's Friday.
Yes. Yes, for sure. Are you doing anything fun this weekend?
Actually, we're going to a comedy club. We're doing dinner in a comedy club tomorrow night with friends. And Sunday, I don't know if this is fun, we're changing like the air filters on our cars in the driveway, which to me is fun. I like to do that. I just like knowing that first of all, I don't know if this is what we're talking about. Maybe this will segue into our topic
today. Yeah.
Anytime, like a lot of the stuff that we pay for in our cars is you're paying mostly for the labor. Mm-hmm. So like your air filter in your car costs like $20.
Yeah.
But if you go get your air filter changed at the place, they'll charge you like $120. And I'm a kind of person where I'm like, I know how to do this myself. It'll be fine. And I can save the money. And I like being a woman who knows how to do shit. That's like my thing.
I think this is going to segue into our conversation really nicely. I feel this. We're talking about living with men. Yeah. And that made me think of a couple of weeks ago when I rage fixed a chair.
Okay, let's hear it.
I can't even remember what it was. I just remember I was in the basement with Eric. And our basement is like finished. There's like a TV down there. We were sitting down there. We were going to watch TV and I can't remember what even happened. It was something that was so not a big deal at all, but he said something that pissed me off. And I just like, you're not allowed to talk to me that way. And I went upstairs by myself and there was this chair, like a dining room chair that the screws were loose on. And so it wasn't like safe to sit on. And he had just taken the top off and it had been sitting in the living room for a week waiting to be fixed. Christina, it's like 10 o'clock at night. I went out to the garage. I found the screws. I got the tools. I fixed the chair. And
yes.
Eric's way, he's funny because when we don't like fight, but when we have a little like, I don't know.
Disagreement.
Yeah. A little disagreement. His way of like apologizing is just by like extending an olive branch, like doing something nice and like letting me know. So in this case, we have a finicky hot water heater at our house. For those of you that follow my Instagram stories, sometimes I just don't have hot water because even though our hot water heater is new, our house is old. The venting is weird. Sometimes something trips and you have to reset it and then wait for the water to get hot. He's like, fix the hot water for you if you still want to take a shower. And I'm like,
that's his olive branch.
Yeah. I'm like, I rage fixed the chair. He's like, good job.
So it's interesting because, and I don't know how much of this people can gather based on my Instagram stories, but I come from like, my dad and my grandfather are handy men. That's never like, they're not carpenters. They don't build shit with wood and whatever, but
whenever something was broke, it was either my grandfather or my dad fixed it. Cars, garage doors, painting, like anything like around the house, like odds and ends or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was a large part of what went into my gym. And it was one of the reasons why my gym was so fun, because I not only got the exercise science part of it, the coaching, the business side, but also this other passion of mine, which was like building stuff, using tools, using power tools. But in my relationship, Mike's dad, like Mike was raised very differently when it comes to tools and doing stuff. So him and I actually have learned to like approach those things differently because it pushes up against some stuff for Mike in terms of gender expectations.
Oh, and how was he raised around the tools and the fixing?
Nothing really. Very minimal, like can use a hammer and a screwdriver when we met, like if that. And when Mike and I met, I'm already like, I don't know, resealing my bathroom tub. Like, you know, I just knew I wasn't raised to be afraid of that stuff. I think that was the biggest thing. And my dad always taught me, like, when you make a mistake with your drywall or your painting, like, here's how you fix it. Which I think is actually, if you think about it, it's like the difference between a growth mindset and a fixed mindset. Mike, I think, has a certain level or was raised with a certain level of like, don't break anything. Let's hire someone to do this for us. So just not his zone of genius, not his zone of comfort.
Okay. So Eric and I have actually two kind of mindsets around that stuff. That's like similar, but different, like our own flavors of that.
Yeah.
So I can't remember my dad being like super handy with everything in terms of like my dad didn't like build things from scratch, but my dad was always doing home improvement projects. Mm-hmm. So my dad, and is still to this day, like always like, let's repaint this room. And he does it himself. Let's put in some, like some new flooring in this room. He'll do it himself. And so there's definitely been a lot of that. And I've kind of learned from him. And this is, I think, part of my mindset when it comes to fixing things. I want things the way I want them. And if I can't have it, I will find a way to make it work. Which means if nobody else is fixing that chair in my dining room and it's been sitting in my kitchen for a week, I'm going to figure it out. Mm-hmm. I'm going to figure it out and I'm going to make it work. And I think I'm pretty resourceful and I'm pretty good at doing damage control if I screw something up, which has definitely been the case. But I also know that I reach a certain point where I have like a low frustration tolerance for things that aren't very easy to do. Mm-hmm. So I also reach a point, I think sooner than Eric, where I'm willing to hire somebody for help or I know my own limitations. Eric, and this is, I say this like nothing stereotypical against like Polish people. Eric, but I feel like there's stereotypes around if you're Polish. Totally. Eric is Polish. His, you know, his mom came from Poland. So like first generation, he does everything himself. He fixes everything himself. Like that's how his mom raised him. And he actually wasn't like raised with his dad really in the picture much. Mm-hmm. And he fixes things to the point that he should not be doing it. Like he has no business doing certain things. And like, I have a very clear memory of one time there was a leak or something like that in our bathroom sink. He was trying to fix it. Christina, there were like 2 days straight where I would come home from work like 4 hours later than after he had got home. He was up in our bathroom, like sweating, swearing, hadn't even eaten dinner yet. It's like 10 PM and he's like trying to fix this thing and he hasn't taken a break. Finally, like I just got so sick of him doing that. I remember walking outside and one of our neighbors were outside and I was like, hey, do you know a plumber? And the neighbor gave me a plumber and I was like, Eric, I'm calling the plumber. I called the plumber and it turns out whatever thing wasn't working with it was actually like a specialized part that you couldn't buy at Home Depot or Lowe's. And the plumber had to get from some special plumber place where plumbers get things. Mm-hmm. Eric could have never fixed that by himself. He needed the plumber to do it, but he would have never, ever.
So my dad is like that. And it's one of the most annoying things for me. And like, even when I was a kid, it was annoying. And now as an adult, like as an adult child, it's super annoying. And it's funny because my dad is I don't see the Polish stereotype. I see just a male stereotype in what you're saying. Because my dad's Puerto Rican. So it's like, couldn't be farther away from the Polish stereotype. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what's interesting, Jenna, is I think I think there's something to be said about, like you mentioned, what did you say? So Eric's mom is Polish and his dad wasn't really in the picture.
Yes.
The same is true for my dad. And my dad has, he takes it so personally. Like he makes it mean something about him if he can't figure out the plumbing issue. Mm-hmm. And like, he'll just obsess over it. And I'm similar to you where like, I know what's worth figuring out how to change or fix or whatever before I'm like, I'm so bored with this that I'm just going to pay for it. Like I'm aware of like what's worth my time and what's not.
Well, and it comes kind of down like when you talk about business stuff, right? Like at some point, if you want to continue to live your life the way that you want to, you're going to have to outsource some things. Kind of like, you know, when we have the conversation about whether or not I was going to hire a virtual assistant, eventually, even though, you know, I'm in my head like, oh my gosh, this is going to cost me so much extra money to pay this person, realizing that it was actually like an even trade-off, if not more so, if I just paid someone to do these things that they were clearly better at so I could go do the things that I wanted to do. Sometimes I feel like Eric doesn't grasp that concept. Can I tell another story about him fixing things?
Yeah.
Okay. So Eric also has a habit of fixing things himself and he will figure it out, like very resourceful, but also sometimes kind of like half-asses it a little bit. And then if the thing breaks, it was because I was too rough with it. So this right around Christmas this year, our microwave broke and we were having a bunch of people over. So it's like a couple of days before Christmas, we needed the microwave to like prepare food and stuff like that. So Eric like did all this research online. He was online. He found this like fancy Samsung microwave that he wanted, but he didn't want to pay full price for it, obviously. So he found it at like a Lowe's four towns over. So goes, you know, drives to this Lowe's to get this one that was like in like, you know, open box or whatever, gets it. But then he gets stuck in rush hour traffic and it takes him like many, many hours to go pick up this microwave from another town. I got home from work that night. He is like in the kitchen. JJ's already asleep at this point. He's trying to install the microwave, but the open box microwave didn't come with like the right screws. Like it was missing some pieces. And so he's trying to like MacGyver it, like shove wood there, Gorilla Glue, all of this stuff to get it to work. And then he wants me to help him. And he's, and you know what he pulls on me? Because he knows that I am, you know, like a strong, independent woman, like put that in air quotes. Come on, you're strong. Come on over here. And I'm like, the things that I put up with from him as I do. So I'm like hoisting this microwave up, trying to hold it in while he like, you know, shoves like plywood and Gorilla Glue to try to get this thing to stick with the wrong screws and whatever. And so he finally gets it in. And it's there, but now to this day, even though he like installed it himself and it took him like an entire day, when he could have just probably saved so much time and energy and frustration had he just gotten the regular microwave in the box and paid the people from Lowe's to come install it.
That's like a money. My dad is the same way. Also, it's like a money mindset thing. Like my dad has a lot of scarcity around that. So he like in my dad's world and in people like that, that's not even like a man thing. That's could be anyone.
Sure. Yeah.
It's this disconnect of like, what is my time worth? And I think we're fed a lot of bullshit about what's your time worth through like the Instagram online business thing. But even my dad, my dad's not on Instagram. Like he's not being infiltrated with that as the primary driver of this story. My dad, like many people, like Eric, I think too, don't understand or like value their free time differently.
Yes.
So my dad in his mind is like, I'd rather save $100 and spend 3 days installing a microwave because in his mind, $100 is too much money. In my mind, I'm like, I'd rather have my 3 days back.
Yeah. Same.
Like I would totally spend an extra $100 to get 3 days back, but also I don't give a shit about learning how to better install a microwave. That's my thing.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Does your dad give a shit about learning to better install a microwave?
No, my dad is just, I think it's like the principle of I should know how to do this and it's going to mean something about me if I don't. Like it's, I think for him, like for many of us, and we do this in business and fitness, like all of us, it just shows up, I think for my dad in this way, If I can't install a microwave, I'm going to fail. And that is like a microcosm into, I think, this story of like, I am a failure.
Oh, interesting. Now I'm going to have to think about this or maybe like talk to Eric and see like what's going on in his head in these moments, because I don't necessarily know what it is for him beyond like a money mindset and saving money. Because I will say, and I think we've talked about this before in just talking about money mindset stuff, he has a very interesting concept about like what's too much money to spend on something, but then in other areas we'll just completely make it rain.
Like, because his priorities are different.
Right. But he doesn't acknowledge that it's like a values thing. Like he doesn't recognize, you know what I'm thinking about now? Like Ramit and his rich life. So like I've talked to Eric before about just, you know, like listening to him or watching him. And if you all don't know Ramit, he's a financial, how would you describe him?
I think he's like a personal finance educator.
Okay. Who doesn't suck?
Yes. Cheers to us for sure.
So I really enjoy listening to his stuff, but he talks about this thing called like, what is your rich life? And so it's basically like when you're thinking about like your own personal finance, there's no like right or wrong answer to what you value spending money on or not, but like being intentional about it. And I love that. And so sometimes I'll, you know, talk to Eric about like, oh, well, like, what would your rich life look like if you had all the money in the world? Like, what would you do? And whatever. And I just, he has a hard time wrapping his head around that. Or
how does he answer it though? Like, what is he?
He's like, I don't know. And then he kind of like fumbles over it. And then I think like, you know, if I push him long enough, he'll come up with some kind of answer, but like, he doesn't really have fun with it. You asked me that question. I have so much fun with that question. He's like, I don't know.
So here's my interpretation of that. I think it's hard to have fun with anything that you are in a pattern of survival.
Yeah.
So if you're, and all of our relationship with money is solidified by age 7, why it's money. Like that's the same thing with like caregivers, attachment styles, because those are our most formative years, and money is, I mean, we need it for everything that we do. We can't like live our lives and not have money. Like we have to, that's a capitalistic society. But if someone is living their money story is wrapped up with fear, it's really hard to imagine and create and dream from there, because they have to get out of survival mode first.
Do you think it's possible?
I was in survival mode with money for a long time. That
How
was
did
my
you get
story.
Out?
A lot of self-awareness, introspection, like confronting my bullshit, like spending a lot of time with like my own emotions, my thoughts, and like just I think the difference for me, the biggest thing for me was knowing that my money story was solidified by 7 and looking at my parents' lives and being like, oh, I'm not them.
Yeah.
But they gave me their childhood money stories.
Yeah. And I think there's a thing, and now we're getting really off topic, but like, I don't
Super
care.
Off topic,
it's kind of interesting.
It is.
Sometimes our parents teach us things about money, but they haven't like undone their money mindset. And I think when you're a kid, you grow up thinking that like your parents know everything, and whatever financial advice your parents give you as they like send you on your way is like the thing. And then you realize that that was maybe not so correct.
I think for me, it comes down to context, right? Like the context. So my parents learned about money from their parents. So my grandparents, but the context of my grandparents' lives when their kids, so my parents were between the ages of 1 and 7, was so different. So my parents came to me with their parents' money mindset. And then it took a lot of, again, just like, I think we call it like the work and growth and like therapy and also entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
As you know, Jenna, is like entrepreneurship. I've always said this is like that fast track to personal development. Like a large part of what we learn in like, another way that I've said this, you've heard me say this, is like our business cannot grow past our own level of self-awareness. Like us as humans and our ethos is a large limiting factor. And so I think just the perfect storm, also a lot of privilege too, though. Like there was I had a great deal of privilege. One of them being that I am white passing. My parents are not.
Yeah.
That afforded me the opportunity to question some of these stories and beliefs and meaning attached to money that I was like, oh, this is not serving me anymore. And I was doing this in like my mid-20s. One of the things that was most uncomfortable was I felt like I was actually betraying my family.
By
changing the way that I viewed money, because money and how little we had and how, just how little money we had was like a core value of our family. Almost everything we did centered around money. How expensive is this? Can we afford it? We've talked about this. Like we never got appetizers growing up. Did you guys?
No, but interestingly, I don't know how much of a money thing that was and more of a like diet culture thing.
Oh, no way. Ours was money, but how fascinating.
Yeah. I don't know now. And now I'm curious because I think we talked about this a little bit on the last episode where like, we definitely weren't poor growing up, but we weren't as rich as a lot of the other people in our town. So at times it felt like it, but I actually had conversations with my mom, like actually when we, right before we bought our house and I was trying to decide, and she told me stuff that I didn't realize that she kept from me about how when we moved from my first childhood home, when I was in elementary school to our second house, they like overextended themselves essentially and bought a house that was out of their league and were struggling financially for a while until eventually my dad had gone to college like later. Like my dad went to college when I was, you know, maybe 5 or 6 or something like that. So then once my dad like graduated from school and, you know, started working in his field, he's a respiratory therapist now. And my mom eventually had gotten her master's and like was getting paid more as a teacher. Then they were kind of able to like catch up and afford our house. But I can remember things now, like not thinking that we didn't have money, but I can definitely remember eating a lot of ramen noodles and thinking that like, we just liked ramen noodles. Like that was just a thing that my family liked, not knowing that they were in an expensive food option.
Right. Right. Because again, you didn't know the context around it necessarily.
Yeah. I just thought we liked ramen noodles.
Got it. Yeah. I was very acutely aware of the fact that it was interesting. I knew that we didn't have money because my parents always said we didn't have money. And then there's a weird kind of shame that you feel once you start like in school, putting the pieces together, you're like, oh, why have we never gone to Disney? And like, simply because we could not afford it. Other things like we always went camping and I always thought, to your point, like I thought we went camping just because that was my dad's favorite way to like take a weekend. And it's because camping spots are like $15 a night.
Right.
So like, it's kind of the same thing with the ramen. You don't understand necessarily why you're doing it, but I remember when I realized it and started putting it together, like, oh, my family lives very differently than all of my friends. There was a lot of shame. And then you ask like, how did I start unpacking my money mindset? You have to dig through that layer of shame, like the badness of not enoughness.
Yeah.
That was a big part of it for me.
Yeah. And now that we're like getting on the topic of money mindset, which was not at the point of this conversation,
not at all.
Interesting.
It's so interesting.
My money story, was very much that I'm not smart with money because I'm not good at numbers and this is confusing. And also budgeting feels like a diet and it's not fun.
Mm-hmm. So then the story is like, I'm not smart enough.
Like, yeah, the story for me was I'm not smart enough to figure this out. It's too complicated. And budgeting is not fun because I can remember like my mom having a budget.
Mm-hmm.
I was a kid. And all that meant was like, sorry, this is all the money that we have for XYZ right now. You know, and we were in a place where we like still got to do the things, but like, you know, there was a certain limit. And I can remember having things cut off for me that I wanted to do. And I remember it being like a lot of experiences. Like I remember when I was a kid, I got asked to do like the training team for gymnastics, like the thing before you're on the competitive team. I wasn't allowed to do that because it was too expensive. Or I was in competitive dance when I was a kid. And then eventually my mom made me quit being on the competition team. Like I was still allowed to take lessons, but I couldn't compete anymore because it was too expensive. And so I just felt like, especially as I got older, like, oh, being on a budget means you can't do fun things. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I don't want to be on a budget.
And so what's so funny is when I hear you say that, that's something that I, as someone who doesn't have children and like, I could be talking out of my ass, I'm very aware of. Like if I were to ever have kids and let's say they wanted to make the gymnastics team, I would never give the reason that we don't have money because that was the reason my parents gave me. Hmm. And I remember feeling guilty that my so like my desire is a burden. So the less desire and the less wants and dreams and adventures and experiences and sports and fun that I want to have, the more of a burden I am. So then my money mindset then and here's the thing. It's never about the money, right? It's about the story. It's about the, like, again, I mean, it's not even about the money for me. It shows up with how I spend money or whatever, but it was what was beneath that of my desires are bad. This is bad. This is a burden.
Yeah. Did your parents ever, like, was that burden, did that feel like an internal thing for you? Or did your parents ever turn it around and tell you you were ungrateful?
No, my parents never did that.
I got that.
Ooh, that's really fucking painful. That's really painful.
Yeah, we've unpacked that in therapy a little bit. Yeah, my parents are great. Hard. Like my parents are great, but like there was definitely a little bit of like, look at all we do for you. And, you know, mm-hmm.
I just want to say this for anyone listening. Cause a lot of, I need to say this to you, Jenna, of all the people, the one thing piece of feedback that I heard the most from our first batch of episodes was, like how relatable you and I are. So I just want to say that. And, a lot of people, like a few people had mentioned something about, I think maybe just my podcast listeners and in general, like talking about therapy. I think a lot of my listeners are in therapy and in the therapy world. Are your people?
Yes, you have like very therapy, much. Therapy we are so open about therapy. Yes.
Amazing. So I just want to say this to everyone listening from therapy. I feel like, because you just said like my parents are wonderful. And this ties in what we were saying about our husbands too. My parents are amazing. And there's parts of them that fucking did not feel good to me as a kid. Mm-hmm. And I want to live in a world where I can say this was the bajillion things that my parents did that fucked me up and not be afraid that someone's going to think that I had like neglectful, abusive parents.
Right.
You ever feel that way?
Yes. Well, and it's the same thing like when we were talking about, and I'm sure we'll probably get to some more stuff about our husbands in a second.
Yes.
Like I could tell you all of the ways that Eric is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there are things that occur. Can we get back on that topic right now?
Yeah. So finish the thought though. So I think I'll say it first and then say, let's go into the topic. Like, same thing with it's with any relationship. Like I want to live in a world where I can say, these are the 30 things that my husband did or has done or things about my husband that I don't like, doesn't feel good, pisses me off, bothers me without having to feel like I'm nervous that people are going to be like, her husband fucking sucks. Like I think we just all have to acknowledge that we all are going to have parts of us that aren't great. And so are our husbands and so are our parents. And like, that's the human experience. You know what I mean? I want to be able to talk shit about my family and my husband without people thinking that they're all bad all the time.
Well, you know, what's interesting. I think about this a lot. And I think because I have an increasing amount of friends, that are in like queer relationships. Mm-hmm. And I find like in particular, like in watching like my friends that have a lesbian partner that are like interacting and the way that they are, I see a little bit of like, I've seen the like, oh, like I would never talk shit about my partner in the way that my friends in heterosexual relationships talk about their partners.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, I've seen that more than a few times. And it's made me like, it's made me question some of the ways that I speak sometimes. But what are your thoughts?
So it sounds like what you're saying is that, like, so you're saying that same sex, is it just for women, you think? You're saying like, same, like lesbian couples versus like two.
I've only heard it within the context of like lesbian couples. So I don't know how people feel that plays out in other.
Here are my thoughts. I think I get it. And there, I am noticing a little pit of envy in my stomach because I can't help that I'm straight.
Yes.
And I kind of wish I could.
Yes.
Because when you're in, and I'm assuming, but there is automatically like an otherness when you are partnered with someone of the opposite sex.
Yes.
And so I think that otherness is something that all of us in heterosexual relationships kind of have to always manage and deal with. And I mean otherness, not in like a hierarchical term, but like, I don't know. I think I come at that from like, listen, doesn't everyone want to talk shit about the men? Don't we all like, why? Like it's deserving. I feel like sometimes like,
well, there's certain ways I think that men, and not all men, but like there's certain ways that men, especially men of like our husband's generation, were raised by that generation of parents to have certain like gender roles and ideals in their household to where maybe they don't know anything else. And like in Eric's case, for example, you know, he didn't really grow up with his dad in the picture very much. So he didn't have an example of a dad doing or not doing, period. Like he just didn't have an example of that. But I've definitely talked to friends before where, I don't know, I'll even give an example from my own childhood. Like, I feel like my parents were pretty like equal partners in a lot of things. Like they didn't have a lot of like stereotypical gender roles. But on the flip side, like my mom can be very intense. I would actually, my mom hasn't taken the Enneagram quiz, but I would type her as an 8 if I could. My mom can be very intense. And like, I've talked to her before about different situations, you know, whether it's with Eric or with, you know, my brother and sister-in-law and stuff like that. And my mom will tell me stories about how like my dad would try to pull stuff and my mom would be like, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. And just kind of, you know, like told him what he could and couldn't get away with. And my dad just kind of, you know, fell in line because my mom can be scary sometimes.
So like, okay. So you and I remember you and I were on a walk together and I said, like, I was like, do I kind of like remind you of your mom? Some of the stories you were saying, I was like, fuck, that sounds like something I would say. That sounds like something I would do. And so as someone who types as an Enneagram 8, there's a part of that story that I relate with that I actually struggle with because I don't want to have to be in charge of managing the whole house.
Yes.
So if I have to keep you in line, literally you're not doing enough. Like that is not my fucking job, is to manage the adults of this house.
Yes.
And because of the stereotypical typing as an 8, but also social conditioning as a woman, that's like the standard that I'm held to.
Yes.
And I am fucking over it. And you want to know what the other thing we were saying about, I have more thoughts now, about the shit that we talk about our husbands. I also wonder if part of that too is, don't you find it's sometimes hard to go to your husband with the problem? Like, I find that women together, we're the way that we communicate and how we talk, it's like more productive. Yes. So if I'm having an issue with my husband, I found that like those conversations only feel so productive, I think, just because of the way that men are conditioned to communicate.
Well,
so there's like, more shit to talk about because so much shit is being left unresolved in the communication.
Well, I feel like Eric in particular was not necessarily taught to communicate, meaning like he grew up in a house where you get in a fight with somebody and then you know, you let it blow over and you get over it and we never speak of it again until that same thing happens the next time. And then you bring up all the other times that that thing has caused a problem, but it's never resolved. Mm-hmm. And maybe that thing isn't a super huge problem, but it still keeps recurring again and again. And maybe this is a little bit of like growth mindset, fixed mindset, because I've talked about this with my therapist about like how sometimes there are things in our relationship that aren't awful, mm-hmm. but I think could be better. Mm-hmm. And I want to optimize them. But when I try to talk to Eric about it, he takes it as an attack, or like he gets very defensive, or feels like,
It's the microwave.
Yeah. It becomes, I ask him to do something or to step up his game. And it's like, so you think I'm a terrible father? Yeah, and it's like, exactly. No, Christina, I once had a conversation with him because I was frustrated because he was downstairs on a Friday night watching TV. I was putting JJ to bed because JJ typically prefers me. Like if Eric tries to put him to bed when I'm home, he will scream bloody murder until mama comes up. Like mm-hmm. that's unfortunately what we're dealing with. So if I want Eric to put him to bed, I need to be physically gone. And I don't mind. So anyway, I was putting JJ to bed. I come downstairs. Eric wants me to watch TV with him. And I'm like, absolutely not. There's toys on the floor. The kitchen is still messy. Like, what have you been doing this entire time? And I was frustrated. And, you know, he's like, so you think I'm a terrible father? I'm like, no, I actually think you're a great dad, but you're a fucking slob. I can't relax and watch TV when there's still dishes in the kitchen.
Yeah.
What have you been doing?
Yep. And I said, it's the microwave because in like the male, my experience of like the men closest to me, it's like, if you criticize this one little thing, I'm going to cast that sentiment onto my entire existence as a man. So if I can't get this fucking microwave, if I can't Jimmy rig the microwave to sit where it's supposed to sit, then I'm a terrible father. I'm a terrible in everything, right? Like there's like a catastrophe thing.
Yeah.
To that.
Yeah. And I'm just seeing how good things could potentially be. Let's take a thing that's like pretty good and make it better. And he's like, you think I'm awful. And I'm like, That's not what I said at all. I just like you to put your dishes in the dishwasher.
But that's what's so frustrating, Jenna, because it's literally, you're like, just put your socks away or pick up your shoes. And when they turn it into this big thing that it's not, then your original sentiment never even gets addressed.
No.
You're like, the kitchen's still dirty. Like, I just had to now convince you that I'm not saying you're a bad, in our situation, it would just be like bad husband. Or like bad
about
dog
them,
dad. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you're comforting them.
Yep. And they're still dishes in the fucking cleaned up the kitchen. Sink. Yeah. So now I'm like, oh, do you feel better now? And now I have to do the dishes 30 minutes fucking later than I could have. If you would like, just listen to the words that I'm saying. That's what makes me so frustrated with men. Like,
yeah.
I guess in general, like. But I'm also the kind of person where I'm like, if I say just clean the fucking kitchen sink, all I am saying is clean the kitchen sink.
Yes.
I'm not a, but what I really mean is this.
Well, okay. And we talked about this on a previous episode where we're both like very direct.
Yeah.
And so I'll come right out and say that. And sometimes I might not say it like, you know, in the most sugar-coated way. But that's also what I mean. And I think, and I don't know if Mike's this way or not, but sometimes I feel like, and we actually had a situation with this last night that like quickly diffused, where maybe like the earlier events of the day where other people did things that just kind of poked at him were not spoken about or processed or addressed with those people. And all of a sudden I say something where I'm like a little bit shorter, snippy with him. And he's like, everyone's just so demeaning to me. And like, what?
Right. You're like, I just walked in the room 5 seconds ago.
I'm like, what? I wasn't yelling at you. Like,
and I think, so again, I keep coming back to in my brain of like, why would lesbian couples complain less about their partners? I do think there is just a different, I do think that women and women with other women do communicate differently, but I also think women are, we're socially conditioned to, and in many ways, I think kind of forced to be more emotionally intelligent. And it's more socially acceptable for us to be emotionally intelligent, whereas men are conditioned, like I'm not-
to hide their emotions?
Yeah, that having emotions makes you bad and weak and terrible. And like boys aren't supposed to cry, or, you know, I think boys not supposed to cry at a young age manifests into these big men with like unaddressed emotions. And so, yeah, you're like, can you just clean the sink? And they have these like meltdowns about like, do you think I'm the worst husband ever? I'm like, no, I just think that you need to fucking clean the dishes. Like, you know?
Yes. That's exactly what it is. And also I think like, if we're talking about like the lesbian couple thing, and friends, if you're listening and you're in a lesbian couple, like, please hit us up and like, let us know your thoughts, because I'm genuinely curious.
Me too.
But you think about like traditional gender roles. And so you figure like in a heteronormative relationship, you have a lot of problems in a relationship stem from like equitable division of household labor, childcare, chores, like just emotional labor and like planning and stuff like that. Like that's where a lot of problems stem from. And I think having two people that were raised with the same gender norms and expectations around that, you might have two people who are fully expecting to have to do the dishes, the laundry, clean the house, and care for the child, because that's how a lot of us were conditioned. I don't know. What do you think?
I think the issues are going to be the same. It'll be, you know, because I think it's unfair to say that like, just because you were born as a woman or conditioned as a woman, that you are already better or like more inclined to be better or efficient or expected to do domestic labor. Mm-hmm. I think, and well, cause have you seen the Fair Play documentary?
Yes. I made Eric get me the book and the cards for Christmas. We've yet to do them yet, but we own them.
I love that. We don't have the cards yet, but what I love that what Eve Rodsky does really well is she does highlight like same-sex couples have the exact same prevalence of issues and discrepancies with how household labor is divided. I think for me, and how I explain this in my marriage, is like, okay, we have roommate problems, and then we have marriage problems, like relational problems.
You know, that's a really good point.
And so I'm always, and like, I think sometimes, I think Mike is still trying to figure out, like in my mind, that's a very clear delineation. There's a clear delineation between what's the roommate, what are the roommate problems, and what are the romantic or like relational, like marriage issues, whatever. And I do my best, and I don't have any evidence to suggest that it's working. It just makes sense in my brain of like, this is a roommate problem, Mike. Like if we weren't married and we were just living together, this behavior is unacceptable. Like it is unacceptable, because if I was anyone other than your wife, you would not be fucking living like this. This is nuts.
Christina, you just blew my mind right now, because you know what I'm thinking about now? Perhaps, and I want to like pull the audience and get all the experience. Perhaps this is not so much of a gendered thing as I thought it was, but number one, how you were raised to do things in your family of origin. And that could be an interesting conversation on a couple of levels, just like daily living, like what you do in your house and what your household norms are. But also I can remember in college, honestly, I think I am just an obsessive neat freak, and it comes out more when I'm under stress. Now that, and I don't know why I haven't put these pieces together. When I was in college, I remember being very resentful of my college roommates for being messy.
Oh, interesting.
Wow. Okay. My mind is blown. I'm thinking about,
so isn't that a helpful framework of like, these are roommate problems.
Holy shit.
And here's what's fucked about the whole thing too. Like before you move in with your partner or marry your partner or anything like that, you have no roommate problems.
No,
none. So you just start with relational problems first. And those are a bitch. That's a lot. That's when we get into, at least for me, that's like the childhood stuff, like the relational, that's like caregiver attachment style, whatever.
Yeah.
And most of us aren't confronted with the parts of us that need to heal or grow until we're in relationship. Like our relationships are going to trigger the fuck out of us. So you're in a committed relationship. We're getting triggered and emotionally hit with the, again, the relational issues. And then you add roommate stuff on top of it. Like,
yes.
Wild to me. And you want to know what this makes me think? It's what? So weird that we have to go through like a whole course to get a driver's license, but there's no like course in marriage outside of a religious context, which is bullshit in my mind. Yeah. But like, think about how hard it is to be in a long-term committed relationship. Like it's hard.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to say that without people being like, oh my God, her marriage is doomed. Cause on some level, like, do you ever feel that way? Do you ever feel like admitting like, yeah, sometimes marriage is hard that you're like, I'm doing something wrong.
I don't know. Because I think there's like different kinds of hard. Mm. And I think of like the kinds of issues that present as a problem in my relationship. And like, as I'm actually looking at them right now, a lot of them are roommate problems that I've had with roommates. Like I would dare to speculate that a lot of the quote unquote relationship problems that Eric and I have are actually almost all roommate problems.
What a great episode.
What a great episode. Oh my God. But it is. And it's interesting to have that like self-awareness too, because I remember there was another night when I was cleaning up the kitchen and Eric wanted me to sit down and watch TV with him, which is a common thing. I'm like, let me just finish this. I'll feel better. He's like, just come relax. He's like, you have a problem. I'm like, yes, yes, I probably do. Mm-hmm. I probably do have a problem that I can't sit down and watch a TV show with you until this kitchen is clean. But it is what it is. And we're going to go with it. I'm like, just let me have this. Mm-hmm. Just let me have this. I will feel better. I will be able to relax more. Just let me have it.
Yeah. So like in our house, it's like, I'm very aware of like, these are all the roommate problems. And what like shows up, at least for me in my mind, is the way that we try to fit, quote unquote, fix or like address the roommate problems is what highlights our relational problems.
Mm, can you give an example?
So like, for example, gosh, what would be a good example of this? Like the dishes, like what about the dishes? Like what do the dishes mean to me and what do they mean to Mike? And why is it so triggering for me that it, like, why is it so triggering for me that Mike doesn't help me keep up with the kitchen sink?
Like, okay. So do you know why? Cause so I like, think oh, I know why.
Oh, I totally fucking know why. I totally know why. But like on the one hand, it's a roommate problem, but now how I'm feeling about the roommate problem and the meaning I'm attaching to that is now my relational problem. So it's like it's a big clusterfuck.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking now about like the way that shows up. And I know for certain that, and I think in some ways, because I have become like more of a feminist over the years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Eric has kind of had to like grow with me along in that, because I put up with far less shit than I used to, because it just didn't even register to me. But I think in my mind, like he doesn't do the dishes and to him, it means he doesn't feel like doing the dishes. And to me, it means you just don't respect me because you think that women should do all of the household chores and that you have no responsibilities and how entitled are you? And you don't respect me. Mm-hmm. And like, really, it's not about that. And he does something similar where when we have like conflicts about money, a lot of times it comes down to like a priorities thing where Eric is the type of person who grew up in a house. If we're talking about like family norms, right? Where you tried very hard to conserve little things. You shut off the lights. You like, don't flush the toilet if you just peed. You like only use a little bit of toilet paper, or a little bit of paper towels or whatever. And that wasn't necessarily the kind of house that I grew up in. Mm-hmm. So Eric sees when I do things, do you remember the paper towel story when I used too many paper towels
and we got in a fight over it? No, I don't know.
I don't know if I remember.
Make it rain over paper towels. We'll see if I decide to sell that one. It was I can't even remember what it was. Now I'm getting off on a tangent. But essentially, like, Eric was, you know, like nitpicking about the fact that, like, how is this roll of paper towels almost to the end? It was a full roll this morning. You need to only use like one segment when you do this. And then he decided, like, to just go on this whole thing where then he goes over to the thermostat. He's like, I'm just going to turn this down a couple now so we can save money since we use too many paper towels. And I'm sitting there on the couch at the time. It was during a launch for Tough Love Strength Club. And so I was sending out new client contracts. And so I had just had, because it was a launch, I had a few new clients come over at once. And so I was late coming up to bed. And when I went to bed, he was still awake. And I told him, I'm like, just so you know, I was down there finishing up work because I just signed on this many new clients and that's this much more money for us per month. And guess what I'm going to do with it? I'm going to buy paper towels. I'm going to buy all the paper towels I want. I'm going to make it rain with paper towels.
So, like, so I have a similar story. Mike is, the least detail oriented when it comes to our money, like the money management of the house. I tend to be, I think I hold it, the way that we word it to each other is that, like, I should be holding all of the financial rein here just because I like it. I enjoy it. It's my zone of genius. Money management and the details of that is like Mike's microwave. Like, it's so stressful for him. I think he has a story of like,
I think I'm like Mike.
Yes.
That's my microwave. I'm getting better at it, but.
And Mike wants to have fun. He doesn't want shit to get taken away from him. He doesn't want it to be too serious. I think Mike is he might be a 7. I think we've talked about that, on the Enneagram, but. And he will be more randomly like, oh, I decided to go and pick up a new bottle of tequila. Like, he's more like whimsical and like free and easy with his money. He's not like super militant about it at all. And I remember last year I was like, hey, can we just like, I just want to look at the big picture of our money. Like, what are our investment accounts doing? Blah, 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 blah. And he's like, or something over their savings account or something. And he was like, don't worry about it. Whatever my question was, his answer, his response was like, don't worry. I have it handled. We have plenty of money for this, blah, blah, blah. A week later, he comes in from work and is like clearly holding on to some shit that had nothing to do with me. And he's like, you left the light on in the hallway overnight. And I was like, oh, did I? I didn't know. He's like, that is so much money. You're just wasting money. And like, he's never like that.
Yeah.
So I was like, you've got some shit going on. And also like, how are you going to bitch at me about the fuck? Like, who cares about the light bulb? The only thing that calmed him down. So my version of saying I'm going to make it rain paper towels is I Googled how much does an average light bulb cost to keep on for a full year? Jenna, it was like $1.58. I'm pretty sure I quick paid him $1.58. Quick paid to him.
Yeah.
I was like, here you go. Shut the fuck up.
Yes. Oh my God. I need to do that with our bathroom sink. Have I told you about our bathroom sink upstairs that's still not fixed?
No.
So I don't have hot water in our master bathroom sink right now because back around Christmas time, there was also around the time of the microwave, our sink was also like dripping. And no matter how hard you like cranked it over, it would still drip. So Eric went and got a new faucet, but he was having trouble, couldn't install it himself. It was frustrating. Like, he gave up on the project for the day. Didn't wind up hiring a plumber. And in the meantime, so that the drip from the hot water faucet wouldn't waste money, he just completely shut off the hot water to that faucet. So we haven't had, and he keeps like saying he's going to do it, but he doesn't do it. And I'm so used to it now. Like, I just wash my face in the other bathroom, or if I want hot water, I get it from the bathtub, which is like,
no, I think I would turn off. I understand where Eric's head is at in that scenario. I think I would do that too. Just like, but shut off the hot water.
Oh my God. But it's like, it's for so long. And it like,
yeah,
I don't know what's happening. And it's one of those things that it's like not that big of a problem that we just haven't done anything about it yet, but I'm maybe Memorial Day weekend. Like, otherwise I'm going to have to, but see, for me, like doing the plumbing and installing a sink faucet, like that.
No,
that sounds plumbing, like an awful, you can't pay me enough money to do that.
Plumbing is terrible. Like, I don't mess with plumbing at all. That's one of those things that I'm like, I'll give you whatever amount of money that you want. Just fix it.
Yeah.
Once and for all. I'm not messing with plumbing. Yes. Plumbing is very, it's above my pay grade. I don't understand.
Yes. That's exactly how I feel. So like part of me just wants to go in there one day and like rage replace the faucet, but,
YouTube. Hey, if anyone's listening, if you need home improvement projects done, YouTube there, I know YouTube sounds like a weird resource, but YouTube has saved my ass in a lot of home improvement projects.
Okay.
I think I used YouTube to replace a toilet once. As much as I hate plumbing.
Yeah.
It's YouTube's where it's at.
I don't trust myself. I'm also not like detail oriented enough, period. Yeah. Like I can't even like follow the directions correctly to like make a batch of cookies and have them turn out okay. Like you don't want me replacing a faucet.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. That's so funny.
Oh my God.
I think this was the most ADHD conversation we've ever had.
It was.
Did we make a point?
But I mean, I'm trying to like find some silver linings here and be like, I mean, we talked about, you know, like living with the men, the like family of origin thing, the relationships.
Maybe this is like the intro episode to talking more about like family of origin, whatever. And like, I don't know. Do we have more to share in the future about living with men? Because
I feel like I have new stories every week, and yet the same stories
every week.
Mm-hmm. Just I am sure that things will continue to come up.
Yeah, I mean, same. I think I could write like a series, like a TV series called Living with Men, and it would be like a sitcom.
Maybe we'll have a sitcom.
I don't know.
Oh my God. All right. Good chat. I think that's it, friends. Okay. I hope this was coherent and
I guess
if nothing else, amusing.
Amusing. I think worst case scenario, everyone just,
you know, so much
across
about
the table.
Us.
It's like a little girl, a little road trip chat is what it was like.
Yeah. And now if you find yourself in a situation where you're getting in a fight about light bulbs and faucets and paper towels, you are not alone.
You're not alone. This was
you're
fun.
In good company. This is so fun.
Thanks. All
right. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Thanks again for tuning into Tough Cookie Talks. I'm so glad you're here. If you want to learn more about me and how we can work together, visit my website, itsjennaj.com, or follow and tag me on Instagram @itsjennaj. I would love to hear from you. If you liked this episode and want to hear more, make sure you click subscribe and follow along so that you don't miss a single show. Then take a moment and leave me a 5-star rating and review so that we can help this podcast and this message reach even more people. Have a great week, and we'll talk soon.